Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Residents of the Texas-Mexico borderlands frequently have to address misperceptions about their home. Yes, it's an area that sees extraordinarily high numbers of migrants and asylum seekers. And that's often the only perception people not from the borderlands take away about a bicultural, binational, bilingual region that has deep cultural and familial connections. Borderlands writers, ranging from architects to economists to educators to creative writers, shared their perspectives of the borderlands in the book Bridging Cultures, Reflections on the Heritage Identity of the Texas-Mexico Borderlands. And the borderlands here refer not to just the cities on the literal border, but the lands that retain borderlands heritage hundreds of miles north and south of the Rio Grande or Rio Bravo. The book grew out of a 2012 conference on the heritage identity of the borderlands held at the University of Texas at San Antonio. The book was co-edited by two leaders of that 2012 conference, William DuPont, director of the Center for Cultural Sustainability at UTSA, and Dr. Harriet Romo, former director of the UTSA Mexico Center and professor emeritus of sociology. Aside from their own contributions to the book, the book features a chapter on the enduring practice of quinceañeras in the borderlands, co-written by Dr. Patricia Sanchez, chair of the UTSA Department of Bicultural Bilingual Studies. The book also features an essay by scholar John Philip Santos from UTSA's Mestizo Cultural Studies, in which Santos writes that, quote, "the borderlands are in large part a geography of the imagination," end quote. Former UTSA president, historian, and art collector Dr. Ricardo Romo writes about the depictions of the borderlands by borderland artists like Luis Jimenez, Ricky Armendariz, and Jesse Trevino. Harriet Romo says there really is no other collection like Bridging Cultures.
Well, I think our book is unique because we have these different areas. You know, very few books about the borderlands have looked at the built environment or sustaining cultures and brought in the history of indigenous populations. So to me, they're all interesting, of course. But I really like the one by Dr. Sanchez because it's showing a cultural tradition of quinceañeras.
Quinceañeras, that was a good
are,
one.
Yes, that are still practiced in Mexico and have come to Texas or have been in Texas for a long time as well. But they have adapted and they've changed over the generations. You know, they're a religious rite of passage, but the young people have made it into more of a coming of age event. And they're doing their own choreography and their own dances that were never a part of the original quinceañeras. She shows in that chapter how some of the young women who are protesting put on their quinceañera dresses to call attention to the issues on the borderlands. But it brings together the mothers and daughters, and it brings together the families. I've been a madrina del pastel, where, you know, I was amazed at how the whole community comes together to support that young person and to support that family in that celebration. And so that's just one of many cultural traditions that have been carried over and transformed in San Antonio. Fiesta is another one.
Yes.
Nobody wrote about Fiesta specifically, but both of us talked about when you adapt someone's culture, keeping some of the authenticity of the culture and how that can be very controversial. In some of our landmarks, and Bill can talk more about this, like the Alamo, what culture do you preserve and which ones do you leave out? I think those are very important questions that we raise in the book, too.
I'm proud of the chapter that Harriet and I co-wrote together. I think that one really has a lot of valuable information in it that I wish more people would know about. But when I was looking over the book in preparation for this interview, I was drawn to the chapter by John Philip Santos, my colleague at UTSA. And he's such a great writer. And he speaks from the heart in his chapter, and he tells personal stories, but he connects all the threads of the books very poetically. And I really enjoyed rereading it in preparation for this interview. And so I think that's a really lovely one thing to read if somebody were going to open the book and just want to really enjoy something. What he wrote is really beautiful.
My husband, Ricardo Romo, has a chapter in the book about art.
I love that chapter, by the way. I wish there were more photos in the book because I just wanted to Google every single one.
Well, we were lucky that we got a small grant from the
Conservation Society of San Antonio gave us $5,000 to help with the illustrations.
And Humanities Texas also gave us a small grant at the initial stages to start the conference. Mm-hmm. What that chapter on border art does is show how images of living on the border, growing up on the border, stay with you and influence your life, no matter whether you're still on the border or you're not. And it comes through in the art of the artist. It comes through in the way that they choose their subjects. And to me, that captures the way that this is so much ingrained in the way of life in the borderlands, in people's everyday lives.
Harriet Romo is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at UTSA and former Director of the Mexico Center at UTSA. William DuPont is Director of the Center for Cultural Sustainability at UTSA and a Professor of Architecture in the School of Architecture and Planning. They are both co-editors of the book, Bridging Cultures, Reflections on the Heritage Identity of the Texas-Mexico Borderlands. When we come back, the beautiful stories about the borderlands are what are often left out when the media report on the region.
This is a heritage that's there and that people don't talk about and don't know about and is terribly misunderstood when you just focus on the violence or conflicts on the border.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. When it comes to telling the story of the borderlands, what story do you tell? What parts of history get preserved and what parts go by the wayside? Preserving cultural heritage can get complicated. Politics can quickly come into play. William DuPont is an expert in heritage conservation. He's co-editor with Harriet Romo of Bridging Cultures, a collection of essays that explore the heritage identity of the Texas-Mexico borderlands. DuPont says he sees a lot of instances of contested heritage in his work.
It's quite common for different people to have different versions of history or to want to emphasize one part of history over another. To tell a particular story for a particular reason. There's always motivations. And the other aspect of places like the Alamo, historic sites only have a short amount of time to tell a story to visitors. Usually it's 45 minutes, maybe an hour. Some visitors will stay longer, but most are in that category. And so that means the history has to be neatly packaged. Many things have to be glossed over in order to tell that story. And that's what people like. They want their history to be tied up with a bow and look pretty and sit good and tell the story that those who are in charge want told. And I think we see that at the Alamo. The focus on one particular thread of history is there for a good reason because it's part of the identity of Texas that the owners of the site want known.
And again, that correlates very well to what you're talking about in Bridging Cultures. Again, it's that narrative of the border. What side do people want to hear? I don't know if they want to hear about the wonderful wildlife that's on the border in South Texas, if they want to hear about, you know, any of the other cultural richness that is on the border from far west Texas all the way down to Brownsville. Tied up in a neat package is to present the immigration and border security story.
Exactly. I mean, one of our chapters is by two professors who focus on the, you know, the wildlife that's along the borderlands, the bird sanctuaries that are there that can be destroyed if we're not aware of their importance and make people aware of preserving them and ways to protect them. The landmarks, like the little churches and the pumping stations that are a part of the physical landscape that have remained years and years. When it rains and you see all of the arrowheads and the artifacts that emerge you know, and on the ranches in South Texas and in northern Mexico. This is a heritage that's there and that people don't talk about and don't know about and is terribly misunderstood when you just focus on the violence or conflicts on the border.
But again, that news cycle doesn't necessarily allow for
yes.
that expanded narrative like you were talking about, Bill.
Yeah, the news cycle tends to be sort of a pop culture beat, which is really quick and erratic. And cultural heritage is a deeper drum beat that has a slower pace. And it takes time to hear it and to discern it, understand it, and do something with it. And so the book is exploring that deeper beat of cultural heritage and not ignoring the news cycle elements that dominate a discussion about the borderlands, but trying to get past that and say, wait, there's more here. And it can be observed and it can be understood. And we can talk about a lot and decide what to do going forward because there's a lot of prosperity coming. You know, Elon Musk and the rocket launches he's doing in Brownsville. And that's just one element of what's going on. The economic prosperity in Texas is on an upward trajectory. And San Antonio is part of that. Dallas and Houston and Austin are getting it more. But what's going on in the borderlands from San Antonio south into northern Mexico is also a story of prosperity and economic growth. And I think there's more of that coming in the future. And as that happens, there's going to be development and change. And understanding how to make change that respects the heritage identity of a place is going to be important. So there needs to be more scholarship and more research and more study of that deeper drumbeat of cultural heritage so that as that prosperity and growth and change is happening, the identity of a place isn't lost.
How do you sort of expand that knowledge of that heritage, that education to people who maybe have that 5-minute attention span for history and culture? What do you think, if you could just sort of wave a magic wand, how would you like to expand the knowledge, everything that you're putting forth in this book, Bridging Cultures? Not everybody's going to find this book on their bookstore shelves. Is there something that you would like to see done in schools or maybe other cultural programs that families might, you know, invest their children in? What do you think is the best way to sort of help enhance this knowledge of cultural heritage of the borderlands, Harriet?
Well, one positive aspect that we include in our conclusion is that many of the nonprofit organizations, the non-governmental organizations, take on some of these roles. You know, our cultural museums like the Guadalupe Cultural Center here, the other museums that we have in San Antonio are changing. For a long time, they've been very, well, the more traditional museums have been not projecting the diversity of cultures and the wide variety of cultures that we have in our city and in our country. And they haven't talked about the borderlands at all. And they're beginning to do more of that. But making those accessible to people, all different people, I think is important. That's one thing. Then I think just, you know, making people aware, featuring the positive aspects of the borderlands, whether it's through media, through art exhibits, through telling stories. In the chapter that I wrote with one of my undergraduates, mm-hmm. who's now a PhD student, you know, we listen to people's stories about their experiences growing up on the borderlands, like John Philip Santos' chapter, mm-hmm. and the rich memories that they have, the rich stories that have been passed down generation after generation, are very valuable and should be preserved and shared.
Bill?
It's a tough question to yeah. answer because we tend to get caught up in the daily moments of living, and it's hard to think deeply about the future and to think through many generations of time past and into the future. And there's multiple ways to do it, you know, to try to engender better treatment of the past, better treatment of the identities that people have. And it starts with just asking simple questions like what's important to you, what do you value, and taking the time to listen to the answers and think about those answers and then consider what's important and what's valuable as we make changes that will impact the future. So where do those conversations have to happen? Well, in the planning offices of towns and municipalities, in the counties, in the governments, where people are making decisions and choices about the future, so that they pause to think, what is this decision going to do 10, 20, 30 years down the road? And how will the choice I'm making now impact people's lives and impact not just their economic lives and their financial prosperity or educational attainment, but also their identities as people? And what do those who made the heritage, because the heritage belongs to the people who made it, what do they want? What do they value? Those questions have to be asked, and the answers have to be carefully considered. It can also go into public school education programs. It is taught there in public schools, and that's good, and that should continue. And then it's also necessary to have well-trained professionals. And so one of the things I like about teaching at UTSA, and I'm sure, Harriet, it was the same for you, was that it's an opportunity to train future professionals to think deeply about the past and the future, no matter what their discipline is, so that they're making choices that respect what people value.
I mean, this is a very conflictual time in terms of what to teach and what you can't teach and what people are restricting being taught in our schools and in museums and in public spaces. But I think that it's very important to be inclusive and to not be so nostalgic about the past that you can't look at how the past is influencing our future decisions. And I think that we've both had really interesting conversations about what aspects of culture are important for people to keep and how do you deal with the conflicts where one group wants to keep something and another doesn't, or one wants to change something and another doesn't. These are very difficult issues, but they're very important issues. And I think that the more our children learn about the cultural heritage and the diversity of the heritage in this area and in the borderlands in general, the more they're going to be able to make wise and informed decisions about when they're the leaders, you know, when they're the people in charge of redeveloping a downtown or changing the exhibitions in a museum or redesigning a curriculum in a school program. They're going to be the leaders. And unless they're exposed to all these different issues about what cultures do you value and how do you adapt and change as people change and as groups change, it's complex, and we're hoping to address some of those questions, but in no way have we solved the problem.
I think it's important here to note that not all history should be saved, that not all tangible elements of the past should survive into the future. We have to make choices to manage what we've got with some respect and consideration appropriate to what we're doing and where we want to go. So I'm reminded of a story many decades ago when the Berlin Wall came down, and I'm watching on the news the scenes of people destroying the wall with sledgehammers and trying to bring it down as quickly as possible. And I thought to myself, well, that's really good, but I hope they don't destroy all of it. And it wasn't. Elements were saved, and because the memory of what that wall was is important, and it needed to be preserved, but not everywhere, only in selected places, to help people remember where they'd come from and how they had lived with the wall in place and what that meant, so that it was not forgotten because it was a bad thing. And bad things have to be sometimes remembered too.
And so these are the same kinds of dilemmas when you're preserving the Alamo. What culture do you teach children about? What aspects of the culture? And in our schools, if we can't teach about slavery, if we can't teach about some of the things that you could learn a beneficial lesson about to improve the future, that's very dangerous for all of our cultures, I think.
Yeah.
Are there any questions that you think I have not asked, or is there any final words that either of you would like to say?
I hope the book illustrates the need for different disciplines to work together in solving problems. I hope it shows a method for thinking about the future and where we want to go. And at the same time, I hope it illuminates some of the issues that are existing in the borderlands so people can better understand the full story of what's visible to anyone who takes the time to look.
There's history, there's culture all around us. And if people take the time and the thought to really look at what's going on in our borderlands, that there's so much to learn.
Harriet Romo is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at the University of Texas at San Antonio and former director of the Mexico Center at UTSA. We also talked with William DuPont, director of the Center for Cultural Sustainability at UTSA and a professor of architecture in the School of Architecture and Planning. They are co-editors of the book Bridging Cultures, Reflections on the Heritage Identity of the Texas-Mexico Borderlands. Hear part one of our conversation at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. Thanks for joining us for Fronteras. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Marianne Navarro. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.